Can you go still, one?
Hey. I welcome everybody to the planning commission meeting dated Tuesday, November 28th, 2017. Before we get started, I wanted to recognize former Chairman Dodge in the audience here, who chaired the planning commission for many years. Very handsome, I don't even need to call him old, but he's the red sweater guy. But he served for many, many years on planning commission. And then Craig here to my left is served for 11 years, and this is his last meeting on planning commission, so I want to recognize his service to the community. We will begin this meeting by having public comment. Somebody grab the comment sheet off the table. So we set aside 3 minutes per person to come up here to say whatever they would like to say on any topic they would like to talk about. And please provide your name and address when you come up. So we'll have a public comment. We will also have is that public comment during the public hearing?
Yeah, I'll see you excited here.
Yeah, the public comment would be anything that is not on the agenda.
Right.
And then you'd move on to the public hearing item.
But we're not the public again?
For that specific item, yeah.
So there will be a second opportunity to make public comment if you want to talk specifically about the townhomes plat in phase 5. During the public hearing portion, you can choose to comment during either portion. I just announced. Hope that's not too confusing. There was a sign-up sheet right here, so I'm just going to go down the list. And when we get to the bottom, then we will assess our situation. So, Glenn Dodge is number one on here. Okay, let me put it this way. Who here would like to wait for the public hearing? Raise your hand. They signed up on the sheet.
To talk about
who here would like to make public comment right now for 3 minutes, unrelated to the townhomes? Anybody want to come up? That signed up on the sheet? Okay. So I'm now going to close the public comment portion of this meeting, and I will now open up the public hearing portion of this meeting, where we will be discussing a review recommendation on final approval of the Cedars Townhomes Plat E Phase 5. And I have 11 names here that have signed up to provide comments on this topic, beginning with Glenn Dodge.
Did you find a pen?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
No, I have one. I just want to make sure you have one.
Yeah. We're going on this side instead of the other side. Question.
Is it on?
Yeah. Is his mic on?
We got a lot of mics, but we can't hear.
Oh. Maybe we have to turn the volume up.
Mm-hmm.
It's working.
It's working. It's working. I think you just need to get closer to it.
Good evening, anyway. I'd like to start off with a question. Do we know who the builder is?
Yes.
Who?
Edge Homes.
Okay, that answers that question. My concern is, with the developing of that property down there, is the fact that where we are up in the townhomes right now, our HOA has spent close to $750,000 just trying to keep those houses from sinking into the sunset. And we're partially successful at that, and there's others that we're not successful with at all. It's the same builder who developed this before. He goes under the name of Edge Homes right now. Then it was GMJ Construction. And this scares us all, because we have put out probably a couple million dollars correcting his mistakes up there, are still a lot more mistakes that need to be corrected because of the shoddy work that the previous builder did on the town. Of course, my question is, do they have a current geological survey? Because we're concerned about them sinking into the sunset, too. They're on fill, primarily fill. It's not solid ground at all there. In the 11 years I've lived there, they have yet to compact it in any way, shape, or form. We have not seen that in that period of time. And it becomes a concern to us also. The people below them are concerned about it, too. They don't really want another house sitting inside their house. Because they're building these apartments so close to the edge that we can't see how in the world you're going to have any backyard or any yard at all. And plus, I think they're too close to the edge at that point. I know this was addressed back in April of 2002, and then got approved by the planning commission and the council at that point. But we didn't know the problems which we were going to have then. And we do not care to get involved in that again. Another thing is, we had problems with the city inspectors. They didn't come around and inspect our homes. They hired an outside firm who showed up maybe once a month or something like that. Consequently, a lot of the homes are not built to code. And we pointed this out to the city already before. And we have many firms who confirm this, that they're not built to code. So this is something which the city inspector must do, must be there at least weekly, and must make sure they meet city code on that. They didn't do that before, that's a problem that we have. The design, what does the units look like? Are they going to continue our design, or are they going to come out on something else, come up with something else? And this is, again, a question which we have. From what I've seen on this, it really doesn't appear like there is enough land to put these units on. It's 11 units are showing. If this is the plot plan which they're actually using, it's two fourplexes and one triplex. And of course, that's a question to us. We went on the city site and saw some other plans, and I don't know whether they're recumbable too or whether they're current. So we have no idea what it's going to look like or anything like that in any way, shape, or form. The last carpenter or last construction company or developer, however you want to call that, left a mess he pulled out of there. All that garbage is dumped right down below me. And I've been looking at that for 11 years and muttering obscenities every day that I've been there looking at that. And so I would request that you make a requirement before they start construction of these units that they are forced to clean up that mess that they've created down there before they plan to go to the future. I know this contractor probably did not do it, but I think that's something we have to throw on his shoulders if he wants to build down there and wants the cooperation of the people that live below it and above it.
You wrap up.
Yeah. So anyway, thank you for the time.
Thank you. Can I ask where that garbage specifically is at that you mentioned?
It's all sorts of
Where is it at?
Okay, it'd be right below my house, which is N0331 North Morgan.
And it's a very large section. It's sewer pipes in about 4 feet diameter, a tremendous amount. Then it down to the ground as well. Yeah.
So I have Scott Walker up next for 3 minutes.
Yep.
Thank you.
I'll be briefer than that. I live at 10346 Avondale Drive, so I'll be right below where this new development will be. First of all, I'll second everything that my good friend Glenn Dodge just stated. We have serious concerns about allowing additional building to go on there. Edge Homes, especially whatever they're calling themselves now, is essentially the same builder-developer that built those townhomes before, very irresponsibly. From my understanding, the HOA filed a lawsuit and won, and not all that has been resolved. Many of the foundations and parts of those homes still aren't up to code and are still experiencing problems. I think it not only would be irresponsible for the city to allow the same development to be built, it would borderline criminal. I mean, it's just, it can't happen without some very serious stipulations put in place to have helical piers put in ahead of time, very strong retaining walls that would go between our homes and where those new townhomes would be built. The third-party inspectors, as Glenn and Dodge brought up, you know, scares us a little bit, and so this would just need to be looked at seriously. That's all I have to say.
Thank you. Charlene Jensen for 3 minutes.
Hi, I'm Charlene Jensen. I'm on 103 Safeway Edinburgh Drive. These townhomes are being built directly above me so that they will be on top of us. So that is a huge concern. We've lived in the neighborhood for almost 15 years, so I think really I'm probably one of the oldest ones here in our neighborhood. So when we moved in on Evandale Drive, there were no townhomes at all above us, and we watched them build those townhomes above us. So I can tell you that that area above there is all field. They did compacting of some of the townhomes that are on the west side. I remember the compaction because my home shook. I mean, it literally shook. The chandeliers were shaking. And I can remember calling my husband going, oh my gosh, it's like a mini earthquake in our home because of the compaction they're doing on the existing townhomes up there. And it really frightened me. Well, our home was still under the 1-year builder's warranty. When we started to notice cracks in our basement on the windows after the shaking of our home continually, I'm convinced that the shaking of those townhomes caused those cracks in my foundation, in my basement. We have them repaired by the builder. He paid for it because we were still under our warranty. And they'll be covered for life now, thank heavens. But that is a huge concern of mine, that the things that take place above that hill above my home will impact things that are going on with my home. And we know, we've heard about this on the news just recently. There was a situation, I think, in Eagle Mountain or Saratoga Springs with the same thing. They had it on the news. The lady's home was shaking due to what the builders were doing, and they too were having major problems with their home because of the building going on around it. Now, after the mudslide happened in, when was it, 2005? It was like the spring after we moved in. There was a big mudslide on the hill, as you know, that destroyed townhomes, and now in that area sits a park. And at that time, some of my neighbors were also on the west side experiencing problems with their homes and their foundations and having to get helical piers. And we received the technical reports from EarthTech, who did the first one in 2000, and then the other one in 2002 by a different company. I can't remember, MF or something like that. But basically, based on what they said on here for the east side, where we are, it said, based on the high potential for future slope instability and map earthquake fault segments in the area. And by the way, if you're building on an earth fault line, you should have earthquake reports done on it. I know Draper does that. If they build in a home that has earthquake faults on it, then they have to get those earthquake geological reports. If they build in an area where there's mudslides and so forth, Andy, what else? What other kind of reports? Liquefaction, geologic, they have geologists, they have all sorts of people come out and do reports on that land there. So, anyway, but they said here, based on the high potential for future slope instability and the map earthquake fault segments in the area, it is recommended that no development take place on the steep mountain slopes on the eastern boundary of the site. The northern adjacent landslide deposit has shown evidence of recent instabilities back in 1983. Some of you have been here that long, you might have remembered them from that site in 1983. And therefore, any development on the landslide deposit or adjacent to the toll of the deposit should be avoided. It's already been 3 minutes? I'm just asking you that if this happens, which we hope that, honestly, that it does not, that you
have things done so that you will protect those around the townhomes. Make it clean. Well, let me just state this too about the garbage, brother. Gosh, I remember when I was a Cub Scout leader, I took our group out there for a service project and we cleaned up their mess. It was infuriating because it was right in my backyard. We cleaned it up as a service project. We shouldn't have to do that. Homeowners should not have to be cleaning up after builders.
Thank you. Thank you so much. So I have Tina Adams next for 3 minutes.
I don't know if it's time yet, but I definitely have some attitudes and opinions. I too am very much concerned not only with the townhomes. And when I purchased my property, which is on the upper part of Morgan, and I paid more for my lot because I had a view. And when they were surveying, I went out and talked to them and said, well, it will not impact your view. I'm not sure that's true. But I know that these homes are going to go right on the edge, and I'm very concerned about my neighbors who live in the houses below. They've talked about slides, they've talked about earthquakes. These people are going to be looking right down into their backyards. And I don't think that's fair for them, with their investment in their homes. And it has been a number of years, nothing's been done with that property. It is an eyesore. I wish you would come and look at it. And it's behind my home, too. And I'm in 10357 Morgan. Thank you.
Thank you. So I have a Robert and Robert Till, and I can't read this last name.
Yeah, that's Till? Okay. They covered most of the ground, but I agree with them.
All right. It's your constitutional right to come up here or sit, so you decide. Mike Carter is up next.
I just wanted to know, does this body represent the developers or the citizens of the community? Just so I know where I'm casting my questions to.
Say that again.
Are you representing the developers or are you representing the citizens?
We were appointed by the mayor, approved by the council, to serve Cedar Hills.
So you serve the Cedar City people, correct?
We're all citizens of Cedar Hills.
Okay. Yeah. Where is the developer? Where is the builder? Why is he not here to answer our questions?
He's not required to be here.
Also, anything he wants to do, we don't get to really know. Is that correct?
No,
just if you approve it, then we must accept it. Is that correct?
Make your comments. I'm not going to answer questions. It's not a question and answer session. So make your point.
Okay. Well, that's my point there. Okay. Is that really the builder should be here telling us what they're going to do if they want to have good relations with the folks that are here. They may have perfectly.
I do agree with you. I agree with that.
Right. I'm concerned about the homes that have been here. It's not safe ground. And are these folks going to guarantee that the damage they will do by pounding the ground and destroying the foundations of all the people around us, that they're going to cut them out right now? But they're not here to answer. Okay, that's it.
Thank you. So I have a David Vandenbrink?
Vandenbrink.
What's that, sorry?
Vandenbrink.
Vandenbrink.
Yeah, 10281 North Morgan. My concern, I'm only an 18-month resident here, about 18 months ago, into the development, and 6 months been into the HOA board. My concern is that a lot of what Glenn has already spoken about, the construction issues that we're dealing with as an HOA, trying to rectify and resolve, that I don't think should be there. Poor construction, and if it's the same builder, that concerns me greatly. The other thing is the impact of what we're looking at as far as home design and everything else to go with it is important to know. And the other thing is would they be part of our HOA? That's something that's required. Or how do we deal with that particular issue? We know when a builder usually puts a development in, they pretty much own and run the HOA. It's no longer that way, 10 years down the road. So just basic issues that I see as needing some resolution before the development and building proceeds.
Thank you. Thank you. I have a Michael Hilke, is that right?
Yeah, Hilke. I live at 10292 Morgan. Actually, I'm the HOA president. I will echo that question as well. This is listed as phase five of the subdivision. Does that mean the HOA is going to have to absorb this? How does that impact then HOA's property and interests? Just from the impact of building alone, there's at some point at which they're going to have to close that street. I'm sorry, I forgot to show you this. This, it represents architectural and engineering drawings that the HOA paid for to hire an engineer to reconstruct, on paper at least, all of the buildings that are up there in phase one through four. Those buildings are rotten. There are so many problems with them. I've had a lot to do with investing and building myself. I've had a background in that. They have cut corners to save money. They have windows that have no flashing. They have crickets in the roofing systems that don't work, and in fact funnel water into garages and down the walls of people's dwellings. There has been one particular building on the east side that the foundation shifted so poorly, so badly, that the HOA had to actually pay for the reconstruction of that bathroom in that house. One other building has been moving for years. Reportedly, I was not in the board at the time, but reportedly that particular
I think building these had people want to sell their house off again.
A concrete shoved under that building in an effort to keep it from moving. These guys should be, in my opinion, be held criminally liable for this stuff. There's driveways that have sunk. The HOA took and when I say HOA, be very clear, I'm talking about the people behind me. The HOA is nothing but the community. They are the homeowners. They're an organization of people that are concerned about their own homes. And these homes are falling apart. And it's Edge Homes, or whoever they called themselves at the time, it's their fault. It's the developer's fault. And I'm sure there's some culpability with the city as well if the compactions on those properties weren't done right. So there's driveways that have cracked and in fact completely collapsed because the drainage under those driveways wasn't done right. And some people couldn't even get in and out of their garages. There are still some people who we can't do anything about those driveways because of the way they were built. It comes from the street, up over the sidewalk, down at a steep angle, and then flattens off into their driveways, and their cars scrape every time they come in. We spent thousands of dollars lifting some of those as far as we could last year. Then we have other things that have been caused. The grounds are suffering. Because these people went in and changed the city's, the size of the irrigation lines that came in, and they reduced them to save money on filters and the valves. So consequently, my question is, the lawsuits on this property, on this area, aren't even done yet. And do we really want these people to profit from what I think should be listed as criminal behavior?
Thank you. Jeff Bosgraf?
I feel like I'm on trial. I'm all nervous. This goes poorly, I'm going to end up not sleeping at home tonight.
I felt like I was on trial.
I am hard.
You are.
So my name is Jeff Bosgraf. I live at 10530 Doral. But I lived at 10276 North Morgan Boulevard for 6 years and served on the HOA board for 3 years as part of those 6 years. And so I just want to echo the statements that have been said, but I also want to ensure that the Planning Commission is properly educated as far as what was involved in filing a lawsuit against G&J Construction and what has now become Edge Homes. Hundreds of thousands of dollars. Hundreds and hundreds of hours sitting in Glenn's home, in my home, in talking about the stupid lawsuit. To what degree? To try to be able to fix these homes, right? Gordy promised, hey, we're going to take care of you. That has never come to fruition. You're still sitting with an HOA that is underfunded from the get-go. Since 2010, the HOA dues have increased by over 20% to, one, try to recoup the situation that G&J Construction has placed on this HOA and these residents. It's unfair. And so my point is, if these guys are allowed to build in our city, one, there should be concerns about what is going to occur, but two, restrictions should be placed on these on this builder. One, fund, deposit, do something to allow this HOA to continue to survive and fix the homes. I can't imagine what it's going to be like when roofs need to be repaired. There's just not money there. So I took some notes. I just want to make sure I get it all. But geotags on every single plot. I mean, the amount of pressure that we should put on this builder to ensure that it's done right, it's up to you. We can't force it. We can't force it upon them. You can. You can ensure that it's done right. Ultimately, as we all agree, it shouldn't be done at all. But again, the plan's there. I don't know what we can do. But that's. I hope that you take to heart what's being said. We're just really frustrated and have been frustrated for a very, very long time. Thanks.
Thank you. Andy Jensen?
I'm 10364 Annabelle Drive as well. I don't know if my comments are the right time or not, because mine are more question-oriented. But the individuals here, I don't know if they can answer my question. My question is, when was the last adopted city ordinance by the state done, or by the city done? And if that predates the approval, if that succeeds the approval of this subdivision, do they not have to start over with the current ordinance requirements? Do you know what those dates are? Why don't you ask your questions, we might talk about it in our discussion. So my question is, when is the current adopted ordinance by the city, when was that adopted?
Which ordinance are you speaking of?
The planning and zoning ordinance.
Which
that's,
one?
That's there's this book right here.
These two books.
Like if there's a specific right, one.
The ordinance, I guess, that governs the development of the city.
Sufficiently vague. I can attempt to answer that. I'm going to do a presentation. I will attempt to answer
keep
that.
Keep going, because my concern is if the current ordinance adopted by Cedar Hills, let's say that was 2010, and the approval for this subdivision was 2005, that makes that approval null and void. They have to apply and meet the current ordinance requirements for the city. That's a fact, because I deal with this every day with the job that I work at. That we can't rely on no approval if there's a new ordinance that supersedes that. That's my concern. One of the concerns, a lot of the concerns of our men's voice. I work in a city that has every soils condition known to man except for an active volcano. And it's not that far away. We all look at it on a daily basis. And knowing that there's an active fault, not too far from our homes, are they being required to do a fault study to alleviate any hazards? I know our home that we're living in, that was not there. And so I guess if there's a push, if this is going to happen, can we regulate and make them meet the ordinances and regulations that have been adopted? Or do those ordinances need to be potentially looked at to alleviate future concerns that have been voiced in regards to development that happens in the city so that those future owners are protected? Thanks.
Thank you. Nate Shields.
Hi there. So I own the home at the 1043 Morgan Boulevard, which I bought in 2011. I sit on the HOA board as the vice president through most of the final stages of the loss of the mosaics. We can't say it's a time super final. And I actually lived in one of the houses that was the most severely damaged and affected by poor construction. we had 8.5 gaps in our basement walls. We had our doors were closed. Eggs were all at the countertop when you're trying to cook. We have shower curtains around our shower just to keep water from coming down into our kitchen. We were lucky in ours that our building had a warranty, a 2-time warranty, which was supposed to purchase for all the units, which Hedge Funds failed to purchase. They said they purchased them for all the units and did not. They only purchased them for maybe 4 or 5 units. So now that the warranty claims came up, many of these units were left holding back. They did not buy the warranties they were supposed to buy. Our house was likely had a warranty, but in some ways, yes and no. They picked the house several years ago, that didn't work. Computers failed. Then a few years back, they spent 6 weeks pouring 500 cubic yards of grout into our building. That's many dump trucks of grout. They set up an operation in this land where they're now trying to build to set up a grout producing facility to then pump it down lines into our house for 6 straight weeks. They found underneath our house, they drilled through some of these sandstone boulders they found, and they found voids that were the size of swimming pools that filled with grout. Voids, zero PSI, that means no pressure until they were able to fill the swimming pool with grout to be able to fill these voids to keep houses from sinking. My neighbor is still experiencing small settling issues even after 50 or 500 cubic yards, many dump trucks of grout to put under a void. The lawsuit, the estimates of the lawsuit that came in were about $19 million from the engineers that came through and estimated the damage to the community. After all said and done, we came in with $2 million. Okay.
We were 7 for 13.
Okay.
Okay.
But we never got any. When I was there, the Roy Jones had basically settled for, he paid $0. His company paid $0. All we were, he had no assets we were able to actually go after at the time. So in exchange, he paid to settle for the rights to go after for us at HOA, to then fight the battle against his subcontractors and insurance companies to try to get money out of that. This developer paid $0 for the damage he caused to our community. So let that sink in. So as he's building new homes in this community, he paid $0 for the damage that happened there. So many of the repairs that we did not have enough money. I don't know if this has an exact amount, but there's not enough money to cover all the repairs. So people are going to be watching houses go up with developers that didn't have money to pay for these repairs, and now has money to build new buildings in our community. While there's still people up holding back with damages and houses that don't function, the doors are now shut. It's a tough situation. It wasn't a pleasant situation to live through that. So my opinion is that builders should not be permitted to build in this community until he repairs all the damages that have been done. Thank you.
Thank you. So Nate was the last name on my sheet. I will entertain 3 more names. If anybody wanted to say something, they didn't sign up, you're welcome to come up. Anybody else want to say anything? I got 2. Who's the third? Is there a third? I got 3. So, okay, so here we go.
Yeah, Russell Fawcett, 10429 North State Vista Drive. So our unit is one that the basement has settled, but unfortunately because of our basement, it's about 2 inches below the foundation, so the basement settled. But unfortunately for us, we're left because our repairs aren't grave enough that we will have to, as a homeowner, take that on ourselves. But my main concern is, I mean, when I think about it, we're pretty much built on sand, and as the homes sit above it, they've done a lot of compacting, and most of them have settled. They may continue to settle, but as soon as you start pulling that dirt from underneath them, I mean, if you went to the beach and built a sandcastle, I mean, the quickest way to knock it down is, you know, you can just pull it from underneath, and gradually it's going to slope away. And so that's my fear, is that, you know, not only have we lived through the damage of natural settlement, but now we're going to bring in and start construction all over again to unearth, you know, the earth and start that movement all over again. So not only do we have the current damage, but how do we prepare for the future damage? They can put in piers, they can make sure the new homes are constructed and sound and that they're going to be fine. But what about the existing homes? How do we protect against those starting to come down, that movement all over again, and then again the homes below them? We've seen, you know, we're trying to fit in a tight little sliver, and that movement, it's going to cause shaking. And, you know, you start shaking drywall, it's going to crack. And so who's going to pay for that when these homes around it ultimately are going to end up with some damage?
Thank you. So,
all right. My name is Michael Williams, 10356 Avondale Drive. Four of the townhomes that are going in are directly behind our home. We bought in on Avondale Drive this last year. It's coming in 12 months since we moved in. When we were looking at the home we moved into, I asked my real estate agent, because there was townhomes behind us, is there any allotted space for more townhomes to be built? He did some digging and found out that the contractor had declared bankruptcy and said the light before he did it. I was pretty mad when I found out that it was not very low. But I think my mindset, and it's kind of hard to say this because we've really grown to love this community, but if we would have known about this 10 to 11 months ago, we would have not moved in. And that's hard to say because we really do love the position we're in, we love the community, we love our neighbors. But it's kind of scary now to think that that could come sliding down right into our backyard if they don't do the right development. And it's even scarier to think that it's the same developer who's building townhomes that we put this problem. So I echo a lot of what has been said today, and I voice my opinion that this shouldn't happen. And I hope that the city council can take into account what the citizens are saying. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
My name is David Kirkpatrick. I live at 10461 Lowell Street. You notice I'm not probably the first person who lives in Queen, doesn't live on Morgan. But nevertheless, I've been in part of the community up there since 2004. And I don't want everybody to think that, you know, our community doesn't have a degree of quality to it. But that is only because of the hard work of the current board and the successive boards that have been in the community very aggressively trying to pursue things to remedy problems that have come up. And if you've noticed, a lot of comments have been centered upon the builder and developer that started those things up there. And if you were to go up and look at, you know, each phase, you will find that finally by the time they got to phase four, which is Upper Morgan as we call it, they finally started putting flashings between the stonework and the stucco, something that should have been done. So I think the concerns that have been expressed are very valid, and you know, and to see that we may have a new can of worms opened up if this thing isn't done right, then we would inherit as a community any future things. We just are very concerned. I'm very alarmed at the fact that we could be solving more problems instead of just additional units. So we would like the city and all those involved to, you know, be very careful how they approach this, because we don't want more problems. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, so I am now going to close the public hearing portion of the meeting. And next item on the agenda is approval of minutes from the October 24, 2017 Planning Commission meeting. I make a motion to approve those minutes.
I move we approve the minutes from the October 24, 2017 Planning Commission meeting.
Do I have a second?
Okay.
All in favor say aye.
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 Okay. The next scheduled item is review action on final approval for the Seavers Townhomes, Plat E Phase 5. Before we begin, I want to just explain a little bit about the role of the Planning Commission. So our role is to interpret city code and ascertain whether or not the developer or whoever submitted
the what?
The plan. The plan.
Yeah.
City plan.
Yeah, the plan that you've provided.
Right. The plan that's put forth in front of us, our role is to decide whether or not it meets city code or not. It has nothing to do with our user desires personally, whether we want it or don't want it. So our role is to ascertain and provide cause and reason for the applicant to meet city code. So that's the primary role of the planning commission. So this particular project was given final approval back in 2002. Phase 5 was never developed, and that's what the applicant is now attempting to do, is to build on Phase 5, which was given approval back in 2002. With that, I'm going to kick it off to Chandler, and please keep your comments. I know you'll be highly motivated to scream out and say something, but please keep your comments to yourself, even better.
Can you hear me?
I'll try to talk louder. I'm supposed to remind my fellow commissioners to talk closely into the mic so that it picks up on the recording. The transcript is at a hard time transcribing our notes because we don't talk close to the mic.
Thank you.
Okay. Sorry, I got a lot of papers here. So first of all, this is my opening statement is probably going to be more directed towards the general public so that we all are on the same page as to what's happening here tonight. So let me first talk about subdivision approval within the city and why we are where we are here. When a developer owns a piece of land that is zoned as residential and has the ability to have homes on it, he will come to the city and present a plan. That plan is brought to the Planning Commission for conceptual approval. And if you stick around tonight, you'll see that we have a conceptual approval subdivision on the docket. A conceptual approval is simply, it can be a paper drawing. There's no engineering behind it. There's no depth to it. It's simply an idea. It's just a concept. The Planning Commission will approve the concept, and then the developer will go and do the engineering on the project. The developer will then go do the public, design the public improvements, the roadways, any infrastructure that needs to be done. He'll identify the lots, he'll identify the density, and then he'll come back to the Planning Commission. The Planning Commission will then give a recommendation to the City Council, preliminary recommendation, and at that time there will also be a public hearing where the neighboring area gets the opportunity to come and voice concerns, support, or anything they want to say about the development. And it then goes to the City Council for the same reason, and there's another public hearing with that body as well. When the City Council gives their preliminary approval, the developer of that property is then vested in his right and his ability to develop a piece of property. There are development rights that are given at preliminary approval. He then goes back and makes any changes to the engineering, to the plans that were drawn up, and comes back to the Planning Commission and presents the final plans. And those final plans are then, once again, there's a public hearing where the public is given the option to come and voice concerns, and the Planning Commission will then give their recommendation once again to the City Council for final approval, at which point the City Council will have another public hearing, and the City Council will give their final approval. At which point the developer records the plat, or can hold the plat, but they record the plat, they're given their development rights. And at that time, they can then go start working with the building department and doing the public infrastructure. They have to post bonds, and then they can start pulling building permits and start putting shovels in the ground and building. Where we are here is the Cedar Hills, or the Cedars Townhomes Phase 5 Plat E, was part of an approval that was given, as Commissioner Griggs mentioned, it was given final approval on April 9th, 2002, as part of the Plat E. It was at that meeting the City Council gave final approval for Phases 1 through 5. And as you know, phases 1 through 4 were constructed. Phase 5 has sat dormant for 15 years now, 116. However, this development is part of the PRD, planned residential development, that encompasses the greater Cedars area. It incorporates all the townhomes. It incorporates all of the homes on the east side, which is known as the Cedars East, as we call it, at least it's called colloquially in the city. And then the Wagon Wheel portion as well. The developer worked with the city at the time, and that's how we got the golf course as well. The golf course is actually the open space requirement for these lots. The golf course, so they were given, I think it was 725 units as part of this development. So if you count through the number of buildable units through all phases and all plats, you'll find 725. So that's all dictated by a development agreement that was worked out between the city council, the city, and the developer at the time. Anyway, tonight what we have is a final approval for the Cedars Townhomes 5B Phase 5. This has already received a final approval. However, the developer is wanting to make some changes to what was originally approved. And so I wanted to talk about that. So in your packet tonight, so now my comments are going in a direction more towards the planning commission. The original plat for
excuse me, our
one page
packet?
No, this is online. You can get it online on Cedar's website. You can download it. The Cedar's Phase 5 is originally a 12-unit development. And the things that are, it's all part of the term of course. So if you go online, you can see in the packet for this meeting, you can see all of the old plats, you can see the proposed plat. So let me go to the proposed plat.
The proposed plat, I believe, was the public hearing packet. I couldn't find it.
We can't hear you. Can we ask a question?
That's right.
Anyway, the proposed plat is 11 homes, not 12. And they've taken it and they've kind of rotated away from the existing townhomes a little bit to the west. The engineering is the same. The roadway is the same. The roadway width is the same. So with the street profile, it's the same. So they're not making any major changes other than the altering the building location slightly, as well as taking away one of the units.
Did Chandler, before you get too far into that, I have a question. So in the background and findings portion of the agenda packet, we see the comment made here that because the changes are not extensive or substantial, the process does not need to go back to the concept and preliminary approval process.
That's correct.
I couldn't find where in the code.
This isn't code, this is legal advice.
Legal advice, okay. Because I guess open to interpretation as to what's extensive and substantial.
Well, how would you define extensive? So there.
To me, extensive is going from 12 to 11. To me, extensive is changing the location of buildings without a landscaping plan, a new one, for example. To me, extensive is changing location of buildings without any drainage plan, for example.
The drainage plan is the same.
Well, so we'll get into discussion. I just was curious how it's coded. That's just legal.
No, after reviewing the fact with our city attorney, we felt that it wasn't substantial changes. It's really not. The road is the same. The infrastructure could have been laid 15 years ago. It's that normal. And then so the building envelopes are the same. They're actually just shrinking them.
So we'll get to that. We'll talk about that again.
Okay.
So keep going.
So I understand this is a sensitive issue. I've worked in the city long enough to know that there's issues. So I'm not oblivious to that, and I don't think anyone on staff is. I don't think the planning commission is. I don't think the city council is. I think everyone's aware of the issues that are at hand here. We're all well versed in it. But the developer, keep in mind, this is where it becomes a tricky thing. This is where I think I'm going to become the least popular guy in the room. The developer has vested rights that have been given by the city council. back in 2002. Those rights do not expire. You can get you go through. Imagine your neighborhood. Some of you probably live in a neighborhood that has an empty lot, right? You probably don't. But that empty lot has a development right on attached to it. That lot may have been approved in 78, but that has a vested right. The tricky thing here is that the developer has been given development rights. If you take them away, it is a taking. The homeowner has rights, and I'm gonna talk about that in just a second. So give me just a second. But I want to keep in mind that the developer has rights here. That they're legally bound by a development agreement that they've signed in 1692.
Even with a different name? Right.
Yeah, no, the developers change hands. Developers change hands all the time.
Okay, so the developer has rights.
Right, the developer can change hands.
Okay.
You can sign out that.
The property developer rights transfer regardless of who owns it.
It's transferable rights. So the issue here then for me as I'm looking at this is
So
this is where we have to walk the fine line. This is where we have to have a balance. Is that the developer has rights, but at the same time, we have residents who have very valid concerns about past construction. So I think we have to balance both of those and come up with the best solution. We have to come up with find some way forward. I spent a couple hours today, and I've looked through this development agreement a number of times for different reasons. I also looked through the geotech report a number of times for various reasons. It's been a few months since I looked at it, but I looked at it again today. And this EarthTech report, and I'm sorry, I forgot your name. You had it. The EarthTech report and the AMIC report.
Yeah.
They were done in 2000, 2002. We've had major slides in 2005, which actually required the removal of some of the homes that were built by the previous developer of the same building, however you want to look at it. My concern as a staff member, and I've discussed this with legal as well, our legal team, is that with the geological changes up on the hillside, to me, I would require them to do a geotech study specifically to phase five. That's a concern of mine, just because there's been an event in the meantime, from the time that they did their report to today, there's been an event. So that's one of the things, is I feel like there needs to be a new geotech report study done on phase five, and not just a supplemental study. I would like to see them do some actual test kits and check and see. We've heard that a number of residents complain that there is fill material there. Well, we don't let you build on fill material. We have to build on native. So we have to do test kits to find out how far down the native is. Find out what that does to their plan. We've sent the plat off to Bowen Collins, our city engineer, for a review. And they've given us some feedback, which some of it I feel like we need to sit down with the developer and sit down with the engineers and work through some of this stuff. For example, if you look at the plat, there's a road profile that gives a certain. It shows like a sidewalk, park gutter, street. It doesn't meet the current city standards, what they're proposing, but it was what was proposed at that time, and it was what was approved at that time. And so I spoke with our attorney today and said, well, what trumps what? You know, his advice was, go with what was approved before.
Is that No way.
This isn't a safety thing. This is simply.
It's a safety thing.
No, it's what was approved by the.
That was it. My question is it based on the ordinance zoning?
I'll talk to that in just a second.
Is it based on the zoning of the planning and development plan?
Sorry, say it again.
Is it based on the zoning or the planning and development?
The zoning or the planning and development plan?
Well, so it's a residential, it's a PUD.
It's a PRD.
PRD, but I mean, so does the PRD plan trump any zoning?
Yes. What's
a PRD for?
Planned residential development. So planned residential development, you get certain exceptions to city standards. So this is an H1 zone. The H1 zone, if you open up the code, what's the setback on an H1 zone home? Well, it's like 50 feet, right? If you go up there, how many homes are set back 50 feet? Not one. In a PRD, what you can do is you can cluster your development and then give them open space somewhere else. So that's what you see that we've done, what they've done here. They've clustered their development throughout the HOA, throughout the townhomes, throughout the Cedar Wagon Road, and the open spaces of the golf course. Right?
It might be helpful to talk about transfer of development rights and or density bonuses for that, just so people understand the difference.
I don't know that any density bonuses were given on this, though.
No, there weren't.
I don't believe that there were. So in the PRD, you simply show the location of all the homes that are going to be built. You show the building envelopes. In this case, you show where the townhomes are because everything else is common area. So that's why I say you have to go off of what the PRD says and the development agreement says and the original documents. So the road width is, right now they're showing, can't read this, it's like 32 foot right away with sidewalk. That's going to be the same as what was approved. That matches what was approved back in 2002. They're not changing that. This is why I say they're not making substantial changes. They're saying we're taking the original engineering for the public utilities, public infrastructure, and we're just removing one of the homes and rotating them just a little bit. So, any questions on that?
So, are you guys presenting?
No.
Okay. But once you finish presenting, and then
So anyway, we have a list of items that need to be corrected from phone calls, and I'll sit down with the developer and talk to them about it and get a good packet put together. I feel like this packet that they gave us has a lot of issues that need to be addressed.
That packet public information?
Yeah, absolutely.
Is there a link to it?
It should be on the city's website.
It is.
It's hard to read it. We can't read anything on it, so we have to get a physical copy.
You can
zoom in.
PDF.
Put it on the screen.
No, I actually can't. No.
If you want a larger printed out copy, just get in touch with the front desk at Cedar Hills or the city recorder, me, and I can get you one.
Okay, that's
great. So, in addition to the items that I want to see resolved or I need to see resolved, work through the feedback from our city engineer. I want to see a new geotech study. I need to see an engineered bonded estimate on the public improvements. I want to see the construction of the public improvements to be supervised by an inspector and the city engineer. So that's something that came up, but that's a concern of city staff. Also, I need to resolve the issue of water rights, where they convey prior as part of the prior agreement or the estimate still outstanding. So, now I'm done.
Okay, thank you. So, I have a few questions that I'm sure my fellow commissioners do as well. I can go first, or I was thinking maybe you could try to do this in a somewhat organized fashion, so we're not talking over each other. I thought maybe we'd start from my left.
Sure. Brian has to leave early, so yeah. Let him go first.
We're going to have to take off.
Why don't you make your comment, and then you can depart.
Sure. So I make my comment as a member of the Planning Commission, but for full transparency, I do live in the community. I'm a member of the HOA. These are my friends. These are my neighbors. These are my ward basketball teammates. And I share their concerns. Like I share concerns. The developer has done a terrible job and has escaped essentially unscathed and is coming back a decade or more later to reap the benefits of a strong economy and to pluck off whatever he has. There's not a whole lot we can do about that. The rights do run with the land. Unfortunately, we can't pick and choose who we let develop here. What we can do is make sure that it's done the right way, which it has never been done in phase 1, 2, 3, or 4. And it has cost most people in this room
something, either money, peace of mind, anxiety, and I appreciate everybody coming here today and sharing that. It's nice to see a community bond and come together. And, unfortunately, it has to be over something that is a negative. I appreciate what Chandler has been sharing. I get the feeling that our city manager understands the gravity of these problems. That the land is a big issue. The land that the community is built on is a big issue, and it needs to be addressed and done correctly and safely. There's so much at stake. I live directly across the street from where the 2005 slide was. I look out my front window. Nice, I have a park, but at the cost of four homes that are no longer there. There will be pounding and compacting again. That will affect the people on Avondale and on Morgan. So I appreciate all the things that Chandler has pointed out as far as recommending, starting from scratch, basically. Anything, any tests and research that the developer has is a decade and a half old. Things have changed, and we can't take away their rights, and you can't demand that another developer does it, but what we can do is set those restrictions within make the recommendations, to set the parameters that this is done to the full extent of what we're able to prescribe as far as geotech studies, everything that has been touched upon, all these issues. This, you know, has the potential to continue to cost our community even more than what we've already been through. Again, most of the statements is from the perspective of a member of that community, but I urge I'm not a voting member tonight as an alternate, but I urge the other commissioners to make sure that we hold them to the strictest standard that we're able to, so this community doesn't suffer anymore, and they can enjoy the view and enjoy their the peace of mind of living in a great place here in Cedar Hills. With that, I'm going to take off.
Thanks, Brian.
I would echo that. My recommendation to you tonight is actually to table this item.
I don't
think involved these issues get resolved.
I agree.
I'm not saying table or not. I think the discussion should go on, but that is my recommendation.
Yeah, I do concur that I don't think it's wise to make a decision in an hour and a half on this topic. But I do agree that we should discuss all the matters we can think of here on the public here.
Absolutely.
One question I have, John, if I may.
Yeah.
Some of the residents have brought up a lawsuit with the developer. Did you talk to legal about that?
No, I would probably assume that those are probably two separate issues.
I understand.
Is the city naming these lawsuits?
I don't believe so, no. I don't believe they were. No, we're not currently in any lawsuits.
But the lawsuits, as I recall, they were with G&J, correct?
Originally, and then evidently because, as it was stated before, G&J was bankrupt, which I can't comprehend with as much as what I've now learned about the entire then the HOA, present HOA at that time, signed over their rights to sue G&J for G&J's right to sue the insurance companies, which was botched, and those are still ongoing. We have received how much, Glenn? About $1 million total. Wow. And everything else has come out of the HOA budget. Okay. What's that? Sorry. Yeah, the lawyers are going to be there.
So included an initial call by G&J to try to go after the insurance companies for a bad payment or not paying up the amount to do. So there was an initial call.
There was an initial call.
Can I ask?
Can I ask what's the purpose of the bond?
Bond?
That's a good question. Beginning.
What application does it have that's talking? The bond
is not for homes. The bond is for public infrastructure. So anytime a subdivision goes in, we make a post bond upfront for the value of all the value plus 25% of all the public infrastructure. So the value of the curb, gutter, sidewalk, asphalt, pipes. And then as they put those in, we release those portions of the bond. So that's you asked in an email earlier today about that, but the bonding is not for private lots. There's no bond posted on Facebook.
No. So have you requested the? Because I know we changed the requirements date one zone the geotech a while ago. Requiring, because it used to be just one for development.
It was one for development. So now it's the map
per
test
lot. Per lot.
It's, I don't think it's per. Is it per lot?
Per lot. No.
This was done with PRD though.
Right. Well, this was all done before we changed that.
So that's part of the reason why I'd like to see them do a regeotech study. Look at the test pits. I don't think there was a test pit.
Well,
they're around it, it looks like.
But they've got it thrown up there. You can't
own. Yeah.
I know this is a PRD, but I also reading the document from 2002. There's a federal law conditions place, which makes me kind of lean towards conditional use code in our city. Is there an application there?
No.
They're excluded from the conditional use.
It's a PRD. Hold on. So I'm trying to navigate some phone while I'm talking.
Their approval is contingent upon them meeting specifically. There's, I see seven specific items here on the day it was passed and the motion that was granted.
Which motion are you talking about?
The very final approval motion for this 2002
intergovernmental dispute.
Which is the date?
I believe I'm on the right one.
April 9th,
2002 city council.
I only see five.
Well, I see 1 through 7
here, but. There it is. Okay, I'm good.
And a moment ago, you talked about confirming whether water rights were ever duly.
That's standard condition for any subdivision.
Right. So you said a moment ago you needed to confirm that was done.
Done or not done.
Right. So we don't know the answer to that.
On phase 5.
I don't know the answer to that.
Phase 5 specifically. On phase 1 through 4, you don't get a seat of vote. You don't get a building permit, so water rights are turned over. So that makes sense. We have those water rights. Phase 5, where there's no building permit been issued,
right.
That's still to be determined if you want rights forever.
And you have a laundry list of things you see, like have done, like an engineer review and another geotech phase 5, and you want to review the packet with the developer, and you want to ensure the city inspector and engineer are engaged in the process going forward, and you want to confirm water rights.
Right.
So I'm presuming this body as well could apply or add additional criteria to this application.
Good reason.
So it's a very open. So I would like. I'm just gonna throw mine out. So I would like. I concur with another geotech study specific to phase 5. I went and walked the land earlier this week. And I'm concerned about the western slope in particular. Very steep and quickly abuts to the homes to the west. I'm concerned about how that's going to be retained.
Yes.
So I'd like to see some requirements around retention.
That should be part of the geotech study that's specific to the site.
And I also want to ask, I'm not a geotech expert, but is there any merit to having more than one study done? And where I'm going is we had a geotech study done back in 2000, I believe it was, and supplemental one was done in 2002.
I mean, the project went forward, obviously, right? Since then, we've had landslides, we've heard from the public about all the problems we're having. So I guess my question is asking for another geotech study, is there, I guess what I'm going to is the geotech study, was it good and the builder was bad, or was there a combination of the two? So where I'm going, I guess, is it really do us any good? I think we should do another geotech study, but what I'm going at is what if the particular person does the study or the organization doesn't do a good job? I don't know. I mean, I just maybe should have another independent study done as well.
Well, that'd be reviewed, but
So that's one item I have. Just wondering about, we had a secondary one done back in 2002. I'm just wondering if we should have a secondary one done again for flat five.
I don't think that's necessary, and here's why. You're going to have an earth tech. You're going to have some sort of geotech firm come out and take soil samples. I'm not the one that's going to review that and prove it and say, yeah, you did a good job. But I'm not qualified to do that. I can read an earth tech. I can even read a geotech report and understand what it's saying, but I'm not an engineer. That report goes to the city engineers. Our engineers are going to comments. They're respectful. They're the ones that are going to look at that and say, no, here's where your assumptions are wrong, or here's where your tests are wrong. There's a third party.
Okay, so my other item is, I would like to see a rendering of these buildings we're about to approve. I have no idea what they look like, an aerial view, but I don't know anything else about them. So I would like to see a rendering of what they intend to build there, like any other usually.
That's a good point. But I think it's more pertinent to the actual HOA architectural review committee. They're the ones I think that are saying in the building they're like. Because there are CCNRs in that subdivision that they have to abide by. And so the
HOA like, is the ones that. Sounds like both parties need it, man.
Well, we don't need it. City doesn't need it.
It's the HOA
that's going to sign off on the buildings and say, yes, you can build these.
This member of the planning commission would like to see it. I don't know. We'll see how my fellow commissioners feel, but I would like to see it. I noticed that in 2002.
At this stage of the review, I don't know that it's required. We're just looking at the plat.
Yeah. So this is why I say the HOA is the one that are going to review that, because they're going to get their plan approved, and when they want to pull a building, we're going to say, okay, well, that's been approved by the HOA.
I'm not saying I need it today. I'm just saying at some point in the process, I would like to see it. So also back in 2002, during the discussion before final approval, there was discussion around some trail easements and things of that nature. And I noticed on the west side of that parcel, the block below, a little gravel driveway that has a chain over it and a sign. What is that person's that?
It's a sewer easement.
The sewer easement. Okay, I was curious. That's not part of the trail system.
You're talking about the state of Vista?
And then I believe our landscaping ordinances have changed since 2002, if I recall. And I don't know if the vegetation listed in their reapplication, those plants are the same plants that are on the Google list today. I suspect they're not. So that would be something else that I'd be interested in knowing is how they intend to landscape this parcel and if they intend to use approved vegetation according to the city landscape ordinances.
Well, would you rather see it congruent with the interior or with the city's ordinances?
Doesn't that trump?
Not if it's going to develop anyway.
So can I ask you a quick question, just relevant to that?
Yeah.
Once a PRD is approved, how long is that grandfathering that supersedes any changes in the code?
Is that forever? It's all governed by the development agreement, which is.
That's what I'm asking. Do you have any idea what the statute is?
It's an ongoing contract.
It's apples to oranges.
Okay.
The ordinances don't apply once the agreement is approved.
So once the agreement is approved, it's forever.
It basically changes the place of the agreement. It becomes its own settlement.
Until that development is complete.
Okay. I know that
that'd be awful.
point.
And beyond.
So anytime we get, and this doesn't just apply to the townhomes, but anytime we get a building plan for anything in the Cedars West, Wagonville, anything like on Avondale, Tamarack, we go to the Cedars HOA, CCNRs, even though some of them aren't in the HOA anymore, and they still have to abide by those CCNRs for the construction of their homes. So it has to be 50% masonry in the front. You know, they have to have their porches a certain way, garage doors a certain way. That's dictated by the development agreement, the CCNRs, not by the city code. We can change the city code all we want. It's all we have, we're always going to go back to the CCNRs. But when we get those approvals, we don't give those approvals until we've gotten HOA approval, where there is a HOA. So that's just something to keep in mind.
The next item I have on my list, and I know you kind of, that's your mention of it. I get more than 2 minutes. The drainage plan, I know you mentioned it's already done, but nonetheless, the buildings have been moved, and I know that buildings are not, they're actually further from that west property line than that originally, which I think is a good thing. But I also just wonder, how does that change the drainage?
The drainage plan, the reason I say the drainage plan is not changed is because the roadway is not changed. So when we're talking about a drainage plan, we're talking about collection on your hard surface, and that's all going to be funneled into a storm drain at the end of the cul-de-sac, and then put into the city's storm drain system in some fashion.
My concern there,
that infrastructure hasn't changed from the original approved documents.
I think my concern there is maybe the drainage unrelated to the road system in the context that I know in the geotech survey, it seems like a lot of the land footage is associated with drainage issues.
Yes.
And land moves can be created with drainage issues. So I'm just wondering if we should inquire or ask an updated drainage plan on the whole entire parcel. Where is the water going to go?
It sounds like you're talking about not the hard surface drainage, because that doesn't need to change. It's the you're talking about drainage on the actual common area.
I'm talking about all water that leaves that property, whether it's on the road, whether it's leaving that backyard, where is the storm water going to go? Is that issue? I have my list. I'd like to have that engineer review done before we approve things here.
Absolutely.
And then,
no, that does not feed into the, that the leads can have percolated into the common area. So we're talking about just the sidewalks, curb gutter, and asphalt.
I would like to see the developer subject, I guess, I have to go back to the zone to see if it applies or not applies to the nuisance code we talked about previously. Is that garbage?
Yeah, that's one of those issues we can have.
I don't see any reason to give them more building. They can't clean up the past building.
We can't hear you very well.
I'm sorry.
The music. between all that. And
yeah, sorry about that. And then, comment was made earlier about warranty on homes. I don't know that we have city code that requires a warranty on homes, but I'm just wondering if the builder should provide evidence that they have a warranty on these homes for their building.
There won't be a two-family warranty.
So I would assume that'd be a civil buyer and developer.
That's my list. So we'll go through a process here, but those are the ones that I kind of thought of today.
The HOA might be able to enforce something like that if we can. So if there's a new home built in the HOA, I think it can just put that in the whatever.
So that's possible. So Chairman Dodd, do you have anything you'd like to bring up?
First of all, just most of my concerns have already been stated, so I don't want to spend a lot of time. Brian, I thought did a nice job of kind of recapping. I mean, I made a whole list of all the concerns that were expressed in the microphone tonight. I'm really troubled that it's the same developer. I'm troubled that apparently there are lawsuits still outstanding between this community and this developer. I don't know that we have, if it's within our purview to really say or do anything about that, but I just want to note that that's deeply if, as Brian stated, I think you're saying as well, if we can't stop this phase of development, then we have a responsibility to make sure it's done the right thing. Soils is a huge issue. And when we call for another soil report, I think we need to make sure we're pretty specific about what we're after. We never built a building without actually having borings or test that it's done within the footprint of each of the buildings that we built. We don't assume that the soil is homogeneous across the entire property. This is a very large piece of property, maybe a small part of the development. This is a very large piece of property that we're talking about three separate buildings being placed on. I'm glad, again, if this has to go forward, I'm glad the footprints are smaller. I'm glad it's rotated away from the existing buildings. But I think our soils investigation should be done, in my opinion, within the footprint of all three of the buildings.
Yeah.
I don't know if borings can be done in this type of, in this soil type, but I see no borings in the previous report. They were all test pits. They were done anywhere from 4 feet down to 10 feet down, and that was there. There was nothing done below that. So when you asked earlier if it was the report was bad or the developer was bad or both, I don't want to answer that question, but the report seems tremendously insufficient. So I think this new report has to be extremely, it has to be done within the property line, and in my opinion, within the footprint of each of these three buildings, and again, in my opinion, should involve borings, not just test pits. So we really do get down. Somebody mentioned voids earlier. The borings are the only way to find what we can in terms of voids that may exist below the soil. When I look at the grading plan as part of the development here, what I'm seeing, and obviously we're going to have more information down the road, I just see a big regraded hill that's going to all drain down into the homes below. I don't see any mitigation of any kind of drainage between this development and the homes below. Maybe they're looking at the whole thing as a PRD so they can drain from one area to another without any problem, but I think as a commission, and especially based on what has happened in the past, that there has to be mitigation of any influence of phase five on the homes below. I'd like to see, Dave mentioned earlier, I'm glad that the HOA has governance, sounds like, over the aesthetic of the buildings, the design of the buildings. I'd like to see site sections through here. I want to understand myself what the impact of the new buildings are on the buildings uphill and downhill as a section through the site. Views are important to these folks. It's not going to affect everyone's views, but it will affect some views, both uphill and downhill. So I think we need to see sections through the site for each of these buildings so that we understand and we can convey to the public through the public record how these buildings are visually going to affect the other buildings uphill and downhill. And then landscape, we talked about going with what was previously approved, again with the smaller footprints. I wonder if some of those landscaping requirements that may have been waived in the past could be looked at again. We need to, at some point, I think, see a landscaping plan and understand how these buildings are going to be in there. I read the previous minutes. We don't want to do anything that increases the cut into the uphill side, and I understand that's what they were trying to avoid, so I don't want to do anything that's going to hurt that. Somebody mentioned earlier, one of the residents, about possibly undermining some of the uphill development with too much cut across this property. That's a very real concern, as you can hear this as well. And I guess that's all I have to add, really, to comments that have already been made.
Gridge, Mr. Gridge, do you have anything you want to add?
Not at this time. I'm extremely sympathetic to all the issues
that have come forward. I think everybody needs to remember that rights go both ways. And the developer has rights to develop the land. They've already been given that. However, it's our job to make sure that the safety is in place so that there's not any additional damage. And as long as we can remember that, I think it helps to keep very rational and calm head on this. I'm in a situation where I live where somebody owns property immediately adjacent to me, and they're going to develop it eventually, and it's going to make my home worse. And I know that. And it sucks. But that's why there are codes and laws in place. I knew what I was getting into when I bought. When the residents bought up here, they did not think that future development would damage their homes. And that's a reasonable expectation that future development won't damage your home. I think we need to assure that doesn't.
I think it does.
So there, that's a good question. The developer would have to have some sort of, it would have to be bonded, they'd have to have some sort of insurance.
So I'd like to recognize Odin and then.
All right. There are two comments I have. I also agree that, I mean, doesn't the CPR or the HOA, shouldn't that also cover whatever this law is that has been a dumping ground? And
if, I'm actually not familiar with where the dumping ground is. So I'm assuming it's to the east
of this development.
Is it to the east? Is it? I mean, they could have stretched it.
Have them clean that up also. And that's my first point. My second point is, I don't want to just like mitigate the damage, you know, make sure that the developer mitigates any damage, future damage to these residents' homes. But that, if this is the same developer, that whatever profit he gains somehow go towards correction or compensation to his residents that he has to.
You just need to apply the code, and then you can make that requirement.
So part of the problem here is the way that the laws are set up is you can go bankrupt and start a new company,
right.
But the same
it's
person in charge of
it's just criminal. Yes, it is.
It's actually not. So you can start another company and that new entity has all the rights of a brand new entity that never did anything.
So
we can't do anything about the developer.
But please keep the public comments down.
So as the planning commission, we can't do anything about who is developing this or the entity involved there or anything like that. What we can do is require that they're bonded and insured, and that the plans that they present are in accordance with the code that we've adopted. And that's the extent of what we can do. So the fact that it's the same guy who happens to be a shareholder in that company, there's nothing we can do about that.
Well, on top of that, the city can, what we can do in our due diligence space is the engineering I just want to mention that inspectors are on site once a month. The last development we just did, Lakeshore Trails, I had so many complaints from the developer that our engineers were there too much. So, we thought this is probably going to happen.
But Lori, are you done?
Yeah.
So I think that there's things that the city can do all along the process to ensure compliance. We do try to do our best. The same engineer is not in place. The same inspection agency is not in place. I feel like the city is better staffed, better equipped to handle a situation like this.
than they were 15 years ago. Lots of changes in the city system.
So, Stephen, did you have anything else you wanted to bring up?
I think people are putting a lot of hope in the geotech study that it's going to find that ground that's stable and can't be stabilized and won't be able. I think a lot of people are putting hope in that. That may not be the case, and so we will do our due diligence in our review and whatever other findings we pass. We can't just say because we feel strongly about development that it won't happen, because that's not necessary.
Well, I have to disagree. In section 8.2 of that
GFX
study to say it's not recommended that it goes on the east side. So
they're talking about the east side. That's further east. What I hope to get out of a new geotech study is conclusions, recommendations on the actual construction of the home. That's what's going to be important, is that when this geotech study comes out, if it actually ever comes out, so here before homes in the ground, that they're giving you recommendations on footings and foundations and what needs to be done. There needs to be somebody on site to inspect the footings and foundations and the digging. That's what I'm hoping to have happen, is that the recommendations give you some assurance of safety going forward. That's typically what a geotech study will give you, especially in a sensitive area like this. Then that's what this study will say. I agree with Stephen that it's probably not going to say it in those clear terms. They always use language that this land is slope up with modifications. Certain things can be mitigated. They're very careful in their language, but I'm looking more towards those recommendations and conclusions of the study to see if they differ from the EarthTech study we've done in 2000.
I've said most of I think what I wanted to say, but one thing, we can't go back and change what's already been done. We can't enforce the cleanup of old trash. We can't,
Sounds like
it's on city. Right. So, but as a condition for this development, we can't say all these things for the existing development have to be done. This is just for the review of this, phase five. And so the other related issues, although they're important, and although we are concerned about them, we can't hold up this development because of those other issues.
Except that phase five is part of the entire development.
So the public comment portion of the meeting is over.
To me, I'm going to think about this a lot like the Oak Grove discussion that we had the last couple months. In that meeting is when we had similar findings. But there was other issues brought up. In that case, there was the people saying we don't want to see a home on the property. And then there was the we want to see weed bait done on the property. Now, I think you got to look at those. In that case, we've got to look at this as two separate issues. We gotta look at it as development rights, which there weren't any in that case, versus weed bait. Okay, what's the property owner's obligation in that case? And so you have to look at each one of them back. And I think we've resolved that. So I think that some of these issues, like the garbage, needs to kind of be looked at back and say, what can be done about it? What can be done about
this? Right. That's the point I'm making. This phase five and the garbage issue are not the same issue.
The garbage issue is honestly never been brought up. Tomorrow I'll walk up there and take a look at it and see what we can do.
So I'm going to turn time over to Jared here in just a second. But I'm going to take a little different viewpoint, Stephen, in the context that I do think the developer likely agreed previously to remove all the trash and debris from phase 1 and 4 and so to do so. So,
but that entity no longer exists. Right.
The entity no
that developer exists. Is defunct. He's no longer.
So that developer is not the same developer that comes.
It's not. No. I mean, it's
the same person, but legally.
He may have owned part of that company and part of this company, but he's not. It's not the same developer.
Well, he may not be the same developer, but we also talked about how endowment rights transfer, right?
Yeah.
So he inherited the woes of the previous developer, in my mind. But Jared, do you have a list here, Jared?
I do not have a list. I do have a comment.
Okay.
So, sensitive to everything that has been voiced by way of concern. And it is a very unusual situation that someone would be so brazen to come back 15 years later and show his face in your community. But that being said, and with all due respect to the other commissioners and the items they've stated, the city is in a bit of a predicament here. Because if the city requires things of its developer that are found to be unreasonable, then you actually are going to end up in a worse situation. And you're going to end up with unintended consequences that will benefit the developer and hurt the city. And so we can make every wish list in the world, but it's not enforceable and it's not going to serve the purpose that you seek. Your remedies are civil. I know that you can pursue those to the best of your ability, but you cannot bootstrap the past issues with this last phase. And that's just all I have to say.
So, any other comments from any fellow commissioners?
Yeah, I just have some, because I understand the frustration of the residents are here, but there's a real lack of understanding of what this body does, what we're here for. It's been explained that we're here to interpret city code and not deal with the civil issues that have arisen. I mean, they're unfortunate. They shouldn't have happened. But at that point, that's not this body's purpose, and we frankly don't have that capability. We do, as Chandler pointed out, have the ability to make sure that things are done to the best as possible moving forward. We, the geotech, I agree with what Stephen said. I mean, that's, as someone who does stuff like that for a living, you can build anywhere if you're willing to spend the money it takes to mitigate the problems. At some point, they become cost prohibitive. The mitigation measures become cost prohibitive, and you lose your ability to make any money on the deal, and so it goes away that way. So that that there is that possibility, however, it can be done. So anyway, I just want these residents to understand that we have a very narrow scope of how we look at things. The city council, on the other hand, can look at things a little bit differently. They have a little bit different role. But we're a recommending body. We provide recommendations to the city council, which sometimes they listen to, sometimes they don't. But that's what the purpose of this body is. And like was been pointed out, we all live here. We appreciate your concerns, and it's a situation that never should have occurred. But it is, it is. We're here at a different point in time now.
So, I don't know if others have comments or not, but I'm always welcome to entertain a motion. I would suggest that the motion is made that we motion to table this until some of these items we discuss, not all the items we discuss, are collected and brought to us for consideration. You might buy, it takes time to do a geotech study, for example. So, that'd be my suggestion for a motion. I hope Chandler's writing my list down.
I will make a motion.
All right.
I move that we table the concept final.
Sorry, that's a typo. This should be fine.
What?
It's fine. Final approval. It's final approval. Sorry, that's a typo.
Got it. I move that we table the final plan for the Cedars Townhomes Plat E Phase 5 subject for the discussion.
I've got it. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Any discussion before we vote? I would suggest that we consider adding a list of elements to the motion, so that the developer knows what they need to collect and garner and provide for us next time.
Do you want me to read my list? See what's missing?
Well, we need to vote this motion first. All right, discussion.
They can amend it.
I guess you might
can amend it then.
Yeah, read the list, and I guess you can decide if you want to amend your motion or not.
One question. Am I going to have to amend to include the entire list that you're going to read?
Unless you don't like something.
You should hear his list before.
It is revised the list.
No, you can just say, if we're recording it, she can hear what I'm saying.
Thank you.
So just reference what I'm saying. And then strike out what you don't want. So resolve outstanding issues with plat and design documents with the city engineers. A new geotech report on phase 5 to include not just test pits but borings as well. An engineer's bonded estimate of public improvements. Construction of public improvements to be supervised by inspector and engineer. Issue of water rights to be resolved. Western slope retainage to be addressed. Building renderings to be provided. A landscaping plan to be provided. Drainage in the common area on the west side of phase 5 to be addressed. Also that the test pits and borings be done at the actual locations of the site sections uphill and downhill to be provided. And I have garbage on site, but that's something I'm going to try to work on staff. So I should probably try to address that with staff. First,
ask a clarifying question. You mentioned drainage, both of the common areas as well as the western slope. Which you mentioned two different things?
I have western slope retainage, which would also address drainage as well as part of any
soils and water.
Okay.
That's part of the requirement that each one consultant
retains. I'd like to see what the plan is.
Therefore required.
That sounds like your motion. I'm still in discussion here. I have a question. Did any other commissioners think there are some things that need to be added to the list? Then I will amend my motion to include the items that need to be addressed as read by Chad.
Is there a second?
I accept the amendment.
All those in favor say aye.
All right.
Aye. Any opposed, say nay. And I'll say nay.
You say nay?
I say nay. Okay. All right. Next scheduled item on the agenda. Public's welcome. You're welcome to stay at 8:45 at night.
Why don't we take like a 5-minute break, because it's going to get loud in here while they're going.
I'll entertain a motion for a 5-minute break. So moved. Second. All favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any opposed? Any opposed? Any opposed?
Who seconded it? Clement. Okay, got it. Got it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, so we are reconvening the Sandhills Planning Commission meeting date for September 28th. It's almost 9 p.m. I would entertain a motion to move item number 9 up to after item number 5. So moved.
Second.
All those papers say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. All right. So the next item on the agenda is review action on conceptual plan for the Wardell subdivision located approximately 9730 North Canyon Road.
Okay, I hope you can go straight on. So as a conceptual plan, I'm going to go back to my earlier remarks. Conceptual plan is really just an idea. It doesn't need to include any engineering. What they've provided as part of their conceptual design packet is typically above and beyond what is given to the city. So what this is a one lot that's going to be subdivided into two lots. Both units are already there. Is that correct? Both units are already there. That's in the R1 15,000 zone. So I think it looks like it pans out in the conceptual phase. As a staff in the concept phase, we look at a pretty high level. We don't get down too far into these. So just looking at it real quick, this sounds like it makes sense. As it goes into the preliminary phase, this is where I'll ask that we do the engineer's review, obviously. And then where they're proposing a driveway, they submitted a document too late to send to the planning commission today, but it shows the driveway approach on the second home to the south, where it's connecting to UDOT. You will need to work with the county on that approach. So now the county redoing Kane Road, they should be able to incorporate that into those plans. So that's it.
So the driveway, your combined driveway for the two lots?
It's going to be two separate driveways. The lot two, the one to the south, is going to have its own driveway out of Kane Road.
So there's three curb cuts that I see. Two will serve the north lot.
Microphone.
Three curb cuts in the plans. I see the two north lines are connected. It will serve the north lot. The southern curb cut will serve the southern lot, as I'm reading it right. Do I understand that you are also then doing the sidewalk adjacent to the roadway?
Yep, that's correct. That would be required. They're showing that there. The circular driveway is pretty common on the Canyon Road. A lot of these things happen. So then lot two would have an access where Canyon Road is putting in, it looks like a turning lane or acceleration lane there. As you merge from Box Center North on the Canyon Road, there's going to be a driveway access right there. So we'll just need to work with the county on that for sure.
It's not UDOT Road anymore.
Did I say UDOT?
You did say UDOT.
No.
You said UDOT and you have to work with the county, so
I meant the county.
I want that. The former UDOT. It's former UDOT.
You know, we so
I know. Sorry.
I'll do better. I don't have much of a list here, like online last time, but a couple things I just need to hear out. So, simple disclosure, I didn't walk on the property earlier in the week, but I did walk by it, kind of peek around as best I could. And then I also talked with the property owner as well on the phone, had some questions. So I understand the building to the south parcel currently is a shop. It's not a home. Has no plumbing, for example, and would need to be, I think the intent is to potentially retrofit that building into a home. So I don't know whether or not I can meet city code. I have no idea as a home, but you would need, I would imagine it would either be a man a shop or it would need to be meet the city code for a residential dwelling.
Correct.
And so there's various codes I'm sure associated with that, but one of which was connecting to the sewage system. They'll have the parcel north is septic presently, and the one south has no septic.
So, backstory: there's no sewer line right there. However, as part of the Canyon project, the city is working with the county on installing a sewer line to feed over 8 Cedar Hills homes along Canyon between Box Elder Drive and Mountaintop Trails. Those will all feed. Of course, there are two lines, that one will be south from south to north, one will be from north to south, and we'll need a Jens Monson to flow west down Jens Monson.
What's the time to bring that?
I wish we had the county here to talk about the county project.
I recall really winter time, that's kind of a catalyst.
Yeah,
I guess by now. I apologize.
Sorry, come on, please come up.
All right, same second.
Canyon Road is. Last I heard a couple weeks ago, they were just completing their 90% plans. So they're wrapping up their plans for Canyon Road. Those are going to go out to bid. And so I would expect next year Canyon Road to be a real headache to drive on. Probably for a year on the road.
That's correct.
Can I get your name, please?
I'm Mark Wardell. I am the property owner.
Okay.
So that's kind of the catalyst behind why now. You've only been there for 20 years.
right? Was approved by the city. It's a dry shell, so the wiring, et cetera, you need to turn all those things, used as a shop that they're probably going for me. So, yeah, so when I saw that they're putting the septic along the city, along the street, it's going to be done up. We get the money, it's going to be a lot, so I'm not going to be here.
The building on the south lawn, how will it be occupied?
The idea is to modernize it, beautify it, expand it, you know, make a nice little modern structure. And obviously put the wet and water in the structure.
It'll be single panel.
Correct, just single panel. The intent is eventually to sell, maybe more like it is on the wall for that other as well.
So your intent clearly is to connect to the sewer line when it is.
Absolutely, yeah. I can't do an RC with it now, it's just a show. Right? Once the septic line is there, it's a part of this. For the county, then I'm intending to connect to it along with my primary residence.
That's my question.
Yes.
Full present.
Correct. Yeah, I'll have to kill this septic tank definitely. Yeah. And it's a nice way to improve the front of the property as well as make a lot of safety on the sidewalk. I'm kind of excited about that. Maybe paper kids. So.
I don't think a geotech study would be required.
That's probably been there for 20 years.
For this. I don't think the body is going to suggest that.
Any other questions or comments?
Yeah.
I mean, this is way beyond concept at this point. I think it's pretty
good. Yeah. We're just going through the necessary steps.
Did you have something to say?
Yeah,
this is my engineer.
Yeah. Well, you're the engineer.
Yeah, I just want to make a comment. Like Chandler mentioned, the county is at their 90% sign happy for this road. So what we'd like to ask is if you could do a concurrent preliminary and final design at once so that we can begin to move, so that improvements can go at the same time the county is there.
Yeah, I'll enjoy this step up.
We didn't know this as a preliminary, but what we can do is we can submit those to the county. And they're going to have to be concurrently reviewed by the county and by Bowen Palmer, City Engineer, for just anything. With the small scale, there might be some minor changes. I don't anticipate major overhaul. My biggest concern would be their driveway approach, making sure that the county signs off. That would be probably the biggest thing. Other than that, the county's already signed off on the sewer line that's part of that project. I don't know that anyone's going to fight the sidewalk going in there. There's going to be a whole lot of pushback. Okay, so I would rather encourage you to support those. As we get feedback from Bowen and Collins, we will share that with you and the county at the same time.
Thank you.
That works.
Anyone want to make a motion?
I move we recommend the conceptual plan for the Waterdale subdivision will be approximately 9,700 North Pine.
I'll second the motion. Any discussion before we vote? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Okay. Off you go. Congratulations. Okay, next scheduled item is discussion amendments to City Code Title 10, Chapter 4, Section 1B, and 1 after reading accessory building height.
Okay, I'm trying to talk loud so you can hear me. I'm getting more outside. So this is just a discussion. I've been approached by Peter Henderson, who's in the audience, and that's why we asked him to move this up on the agenda. To discuss altering the city's code or discussing a proposal to change the code for accessory buildings. Currently, accessory buildings in any zone are limited to 20 feet to pitch, right? And Mr. Henderson was interested in building a home that, not a home, but a shop, is that right?
Shop garage.
That exceeded the 20 feet, and as it currently stands, you can't do that. So the question was raised, what would it take to get this changed? And obviously, it has to go through the planning commission, has to go through the city council. But anytime a question like this comes up, we do like to look at what other cities are doing and see, you know, are we in line with other communities around us? how similar are we, how dissimilar are we? And just looking around, Harriman has language that allows for taller buildings on larger lots, and Draper and Pleasant Grove both allow for accessory structures to have the built up to 25 feet. The Harriman code is something I really like. It gives some latitude on these larger lots. So in Mr. Henderson's case, his lot is, I believe it's an acre.
Right? Yeah, correct.
It's 1 acre, and he's in the R1 20,000. So in theory, his lot could be subdivided, and then a second home could be put on that lot. That goes up, built up to 35 feet. 5 feet, and then no longer, that, as long as that accessory structure is there, we're like not going to be subdivided. Because it's already got a structure, and it's hard to subdivide that. So on these larger lots, so my thought process, this is why it's on the discussion tonight, because I want to get feedback from the Planning Commission and kind of get your input. Some of these lots, they're much larger than the zone that they're in, especially R15 and R20,000. So in Mr. Henderson's case, his lot is twice as big as the zone requires. So in cases where there's a much larger lot, extending the accessory building height to include a little bit taller building, knowing full well that there could be a 35-foot home there one day, in lieu of a garage or in lieu of a shed of some sort. So I wanted to have this as a discussion item and get your feedback and see how you felt about moving forward.
I have a question.
Sure.
What is the setbacks from the
setbacks?
Yeah, from the property.
I believe it's 10 feet.
It's 50 feet from Canyon Road, mm-hmm. and then it's going to be whatever the side setbacks are for accessory building, right?
Accessory buildings are, it really depends on the zone, right? And I haven't memorized them all. But they're allowed to be built much closer to the property line. So this is where I would want to do something where the higher you go, the more pushback from that property line is, so it reduces the impact. So you're not building a wall of shit. So right now, let's say, I'm just going to throw out numbers, don't quote me on these. I'm going on the record. So let's say your setback is 10 feet and you can build up to 20, right? Well, what if it was, you build it 25, but for every foot you go above 20, you add an additional 2 feet of setback. So now it's 20-foot setback, and you build it to 25 miles. That was the thought process, and this only would apply, we're going to try to draft the code. My opinion is it should only apply to lots that are at least twice as big as the zone that they're in, and so it applies to R115 and R120,000. So lots that are meant for, right, the R120,000 is a rural, residential, agricultural type zone. And 15,000 is a pretty large lot in this city. Unless you're the general planner that says that's a very small lot.
Have we, in recent memory, we rejected or denied other applicants to have an accessory building this height in the city elsewhere?
I'm sure it's happened. The ones I know of were not in these zones.
You're saying that property this size.
The one I know of was in the PR 3.2 zone. I'm sure that the R11,000. The R11,000 is much smaller zone, there's much tighter density. To me, that is a factor to consider.
So, having learned from the ground mounted solar panel code that we previously, where we didn't necessarily take height into account and its impact on neighbors. I'm just wondering, in this particular case, for example, you have a lot, or there's a lot, I don't know what's part of that, I don't know what the impact is, and I'm generally not in favor of trying to change the code specifically for one president party, but I also agree and have some thoughts that it would be great if you would like to do the same too, right? I'm just trying to think that independent consequences that might exist elsewhere in the city would be the.
Well, the precedent you look at is in commercial zones. The commercial zone has a height, and then you can go to another height and you add a setback up to a maximum. So there's a precedent in
there. This is a good point. This is where I say, he can just as easily be the expert. He comes in, brings some concept plans, and I want to split my lot and where that 25-foot building now is, it's a 35-foot building.
Right.
So I mentioned, I think I know we can be sensitive to that. That's once again why I wanted to bring this to more discussion, because it's really invasive. Just because I don't like carving out code for one individual, but this goes back to where I said, but I do like to make sure that our code is kind of congruent with other communities around us, that we're not the outlier. So if there's something that we're doing we can do better, I see what we can.
You are assuming that the neighbors are better now, so we can say that, right?
No, so I'm saying doing better. Saying doing better.
Maybe they should learn from us. So
some of them probably do. Not going to mention names.
Would this not be, I mean, it doesn't sound like this is happening very commonly, somebody's asking for this.
It's not
why the Board of Adjustments is this.
No, because the Board of Adjustment would grant variance for, they would not grant a variance for something that's self-imposed. This would be completely self-imposed.
Yeah. Well, I didn't express my thoughts. I have no concern about pursuing this.
Yeah.
We'll have to look at this as two separate issues. Where initially that ground mounted solar code that we had, that application we got, you know, a year ago, where we didn't have any code for ground mounted solar, we had to treat it as an accessory structure, especially an accessory building business. So they could build it up to 20 feet. And now that there's new code, it will follow that jurisdiction was the building was on the accessory structure. Good question.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Okay. Makes sense as long as we set up some guidelines for requirements.
And like I said, I'm not usually a fan of carving a code for one individual, but if you look into it and it makes a little bit of sense, then I'm not looking at it.
Well, they're on Canyon Road, you know, some former Pleasant Grove lots. There were some accessory buildings built that exceeded Pleasant Grove Road, and then the neighbor tried to do it. So anyway, there's been some arbitrariness, but they're all serial business now. So they come into the dark.
The only thing I might add, you're considering the code, is the impact on the neighbors. Apparently none here, but there could be down the road on other applications. And I'm not prepared to define that tonight, but you know, we are talking about views.
As I think about it, and I thought about this a little bit, as you draft that code, the impact should be similar to what a home would be on a similar piece of situated land. So, you know, in this case, it's a setback for the, let's say something about it. The setback for the from Canyon Road, from center line to Canyon Road is like 70 feet, 80 feet.
Center line Canyon Road.
Center line is like 70 feet. That's per city code, but the site setback, where there's a flag lot right next to it to the north, it could be 12 feet, and that's a 35 foot building. So, you know, if we're saying, okay, at a minimum of 10 feet, but, you know, if you're going to do this accessory structure where there already is a main building, you have to set that back even more. I feel like the impact is probably the same as if it was subdivided, so that's where I'm going on this. So we'll grab something and bring back.
So the next agenda item.
Good touch.
Review recommendation amendments to City Code Title 10, Chapter 5, Section 38 relating to ground mounted renewable energy systems. Now, in our last council meeting, Greg Clement accepted an assignment to do some researching about some language, which he has done, I believe. And also, in the packet, there was a whole new section of language, I wasn't quite sure what the intent was.
That was the solar-friendly toolbox?
Yeah.
That was what you provided in the last
one? The last one? Sorry, okay, so you gave us earlier, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
You just put it back in the packet.
Okay. So, how would you like to proceed, Ken?
Yeah, I would like to want to state first, or should we...
I'd like to state that I think Rick should present it.
Yeah. Okay. Greg, you want to present your,
I didn't make any changes to this code.
No, really?
Yeah, no, I will. Well, I just kind of went off the comments that were made in our last time we discussed it, which was previous code, we had it written for 15, the maximum height of 20 feet. Discussion said that should be 15. Looking at some other codes, looking at some of the other codes from some other cities, one thing that was added that I added was total surface area of the arrays. Because we have in section C, ground mounted solar systems should not exceed 100 square feet per mount. A lot of cities had a total square footage limit, which was generally.
This language is not in your package. Oh. You were sending an email earlier today.
Yesterday? So,
but it's not very long. You can probably read it to us.
The record. Anyway, so the highlighted areas are where it differs from what was presented last time. One thing was added was a structural engineer certifying the structure that was in some of the Maple Plains code. The other one was removal ground mounted solar energy device must be upgraded, repaired, or removed from property within 3 months becoming inoperable and inefficient or obsolete. I don't know how you enforce that. So anyway, I don't know. I mean, those are just ideas.
The one I did share back with you just for the record was we last time talked about making this applicable under the conditional use.
Yes.
Part of the code. For instance, it said this language.
Well, that was that was something you suggested after. And I agree with that. That's fine.
Well, for the new record, I would suggest we
So would you just add language saying this is a conditional use? Or,
We could. That could be part of the motion. One other item I want to add is a caveat that we talked about it being a conditional use, but not a conditional use not resuming.
So kind of the thing is what we just talked about, 20,000 and 20,000.
Yeah. Here are lots.
They're just, you know, all together, so.
It's always an option. What, what zones are you suggesting we exclude when you say that?
Everything but R15 and longer R15.
Why those smaller lots? So a small lot is prohibited or permitted? Because of the setback requirement? Where is it prohibited, I guess? We have that
page, right? So we need to be suggesting it be
yeah.
It's something that would
yeah.
Restricted to larger lots.
I have no issue with that. I just think we just clearly state it's prohibited in small lots.
Of course. We can say only allowed in certain zones.
Right. I'm fine.
If we were to do that, change the example of 5%.
Sure.
No, there's nothing sacred on any of this.
Yeah, so. I would immediately change that because the example shows a smaller lot.
What if it was this? We can run like rather than 5% of the total lot area, what if it was 5% of the rear lot area? It drastically reduces it.
So anything behind the back wall of the house.
Yeah.
So they'd have to measure that and say we've got 5% here. And once again, I'm going on 5%. It could be made to raise that to 10%, and it's still be smaller than 5% of the total.
And not being a solar guy, it's 100 square feet. And you might be able to see.
Yeah, so I was trying to think about that, and I have to ask one of my guys.
10 by 10 is 100.
Yeah, but
is that good or bad?
You're not allowed to net produce. So, like, I can't
generate more than my load would ever use at that point. I mean, I can put back onto the grid, but I can't put more back on that I've ever pulled off.
Okay, so you have to be neutral.
Yeah, you have to be neutral. So you can't freeze. You can't be an energy producer. You can be a net zero person, but you can't be an energy producer. And I don't know what that is for residential.
Well, that language, I don't know what that
is. Is that dictated by Rocky Mountain Power?
It's dictated by the utility commission, so you have to be a qualified facility, which is essentially regulated like a power company is, to sell back to us and individuals can.
So I guess what I ask is, if you're regulated by those people, I don't know if the city needs to be the ones that have it.
No, I'm not.
No, I was just asking.
We're just going to go
and clarify for my sake. Yeah.
How big of an array is.
Like, how much would that, 10 by 10, 100 square feet, how much would that freeze? Probably not going to be enough to offset a residential load, but two of them maybe.
Well, so I don't know if this number is arbitrarily or
it was. It was in Maple.
Yeah, but Mapleton,
you 5% of the rear yard, so it's certainly it's 7 months.
Well, I don't know.
I just want to build a different argument by owners.
I don't know.
Right. You can now it's your own. No. You guys were the commission panels.
So is there anything that this body needs to add to this language other than what is suggested about it being conditional use and limited to the R zones
generally? R20.
Anything else want to?
I want to know how we're going to monitor what is the emissions.
That's pretty subjective.
Yeah.
that's not up to us, though, right?
How should we keep that intact?
We go 365 days of cloudy and everything's
out. There's going to be probably an efficiency standard in the electrical code at this point. Like, you can't just go to our rate and build your own equipment. I think the electrical code says that it has to be modern solar panels or something like that. I'm not sure, but I think that's the case.
Well, I mean, I don't know that I think it's in there. It's just a way that if it's a nuisance, that you've got something to go back on.
Hey, to that point, should we have anything in there that states it needs to be installed by a professionally licensed contractor?
It has to be by code.
You can install them, but they have to be tied into your power supply.
Where is that located? You see that's code where?
That is
National Electric Code,
Building Code, and Electric Code. Okay. It's not city code, but
we want it in here.
But we've adopted
it. But I think this is one where I've been getting a couple emails today about that issue. Somebody wanted to install the solar panels themselves. But once the connection is made, once you are net metering, then you have to have that done by a professional license.
But there's going to be effective grounding and all kinds of other things too. Like, we won't let you tie into our system until you've done an effective grounding study in all of America. So there's some pieces of this that don't necessarily connect. Because you can do it a certain way by yourself, but it's not going to be meeting the standards that are required to connect to the grid.
Right. Part of the code I do is education to the public as well. So our citizens are going to read this code, and if there's nothing in there about how can you get somebody to connect it for them, or they, you know what I'm saying? I mean, part of it is they're not going to be creating all these
building
codes and such, right?
Well, they know they have to pull a permit. So isn't there language about permits?
No.
Well, I mean, that's your answer to the pull permit.
Well, if it's conditional use, there you go. Yeah. And the building permit, yes, that's the
by the electrician or whoever the installer.
So to me, the only item that seems to me, the only item that we discussed and not resolved is C, which was what would be the total, what would be the limit of the total surface area. It was intrigued by your idea of 5% of the rear yard. I don't know if we do that and up to a maximum amount, but I talked a little bit, but I don't know if we could really just figure out what's that maximum amount, what should that be. Answer. It just seems like that's the one item that can finalize this.
I agree. So why, I guess why 5% and not 10%? So
wasn't there a limit on accessory structures covering
there is
what would it's like 50%?
I don't really have a problem with 10% personally.
If you go 10% of the rear setback, imagine you're taking out the building footprint. You're taking out the sides and you're taking out the front out of the calculation. So you're only talking about the back portion of your yard. 5% of that's going to be very small. So it might almost be too small. They're making it prohibitive for everyone. That's why I said it might be interesting to go higher on that percentage and still be within what you're comfortable with. I can send you the pictures again if you'd like.
No, I mean, in my neighborhood, I'm trying to picture this, what it looked like in my neighborhood. Well, if you're talking an acre lot, your rear yard could be 20,000 feet. So we're talking about 2,000.
You got 20 mounts there.
Right. Yeah, that's
10% of
you. You're overbasing
it. It's going to be really big. There's always going to be an exception. What about the 15,000 square foot lot that has, let's say, 6,000? Six, it's still a lot. 10%. Maybe 10%. Brainstorm it as 10% is too much. Maybe it is 5%. 5% based on the rear setback area.
It's
going to
be hard to
like
clarify if
students
don't know. It's going to be hard to make where the child is situated.
It will be like that. They will be the ones that will have some sort of study that shows what their risk of that area is. Say I have 680 square feet, so I'm putting 60 square foot, 30 square foot. So
that's why it's an additional use, right? Each condition may be
different. It'd be like a fence plan or something.
Yeah. Fence plan is a little more complicated, but yeah, same idea.
Is that language going to be added?
Whatever numbers you're okay with, I would add a motion.
But you're moving as far as a plan being provided?
Yeah.
For you.
I think it doesn't hurt to add language that requires a plan to be submitted for approval. That language needs to be made that it's drawn up, drafted, that it's a conditional use, that one of the conditions is the plan is submitted, that it's only allowed on our 20,000, and then whatever percentages and how you measure the property of the on what I carry.
Anyone want to make a motion, or we want to talk about this more?
You want to make your own motion, Craig?
The only other thing to discuss is that in item 4, is either or Mapleton had this language about recognizing the property rights of others, property owners to start building about. That language is in there. I struck it out because it seemed a little bit redundant, but I didn't know if someone thought they really wanted it. It was just kind of a
famous. I guess the only thing that may be missing is trying to mitigate someone's views on the property, for example. Like the example we had previously, right? And if there's a conditional use, we need to have conditions that people in the city can use to deny or to accept, right?
Well, the standards are already established in 10.5.7, and those are, those are going to be your health, safety, welfare, light, traffic. The standards are established in the conditional use code.
So where we say this is a conditional use, it then becomes subject to those standards. So we couldn't put it in the other side.
I understand.
It's a stupid example, but an example.
Well, and my question is, do you guys want to see the final one for the additions?
We can bring this back. There's not a rush. To me, it's more important here, right? Right, you won't be here to, won't be here.
It won't be here in January. Unless he's going to stay.
You can't make it.
I thought you were going to pull your assignment to make a motion on this with your.
You can't decide until it's sold. No.
And the general plan again.
I don't think we need to punt. First, that's my thing. I think it's been a worse thing about the fourth time. I think we should talk this thing out.
That was my question. You felt like you wanted to see it again in the final form?
No, I didn't want to see this again.
What round on the floor?
I have bad news though. If you are okay with the conditional use and allowed in only the R115 and R120,000 zones, there will be public hearings for adding as a conditional use in those zones as we amend those zone codes.
Okay.
But at that point, just saying, you've already said it's a conditional use, which is pretty fast, but you will have to talk about it. Go ahead.
Alright. As long as geotech's not involved, I'm fine.
For that, we're structural engineers at times, so. Okay, so if this body doesn't want to see it again.
Yeah, I don't want to. Maybe they, like, that was one person.
I don't hear nobody screaming and saying,
no,
let's wrap up
the screen. Well, I think if we can do that again, that would be okay.
Do it all at once that night.
Oh, you don't want to.
I guess you have two options. You can make a recommendation tonight, knowing that you're going to have to come back and amend those two subdivision, the condition sections of those subdivisions. So we're going to talk about it again tonight, regardless.
Okay.
But the actual solar code itself. I guess that's the question.
Okay, well, I'll make a motion then. If we recommend amendment to City Code 10, Chapter 5, Section 38. Section 38.
Yep.
If we just reference the document provided with the addition of Section 3 requiring a conditional use permit and requiring plan. The ground mounted solar system submitted for approval, and that the ground mounted solar is only allowed in the R15,000 and R20,000 zones. And
can I ask one clarifying question? The plan to be submitted for approval, I would like it to be approved by building and zoning.
Okay.
Okay, and then 5%, in Section C, adding language, the more than 5% of the rear yard area rather than the lot area.
Rear setback? No.
Rear yard.
We need to state it's only permitted in the rear yard, prohibited in the front and side yard.
Those are in there.
Sorry, there. Okay.
It says side as well, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
So I'll second the motion.
Any discussion before we vote? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? If it's me, I'll say nay.
You did want to say again.
Aye. Been consistent in my opposition to ground mounted solar. What's that?
All right. Should we talk about the other thing that's been
on the agenda? So, the next item is a review recommendation on amendments to City Code Title 10, Chapter 5, Section 7, landscaping related to artificial turf.
Okay. So,
this code, I tried to take what Dave Briggs provided in the last meeting, what we were presenting as well, kind of condense it into one code. And I like the table that listed the zones that's allowed in, excluding the shopping center zone. I thought we talked about that. I'm not being allowed in that zone. But I tried to break it down into three separate sections. One section covers the look and general appearance of the artificial turf. The second section dictates the minimum standards for installation. And then the third section is maintenance requirements. I tried to fit the requirements into one of those three areas. So, anyway. Thank you, guys.
Well, one item I didn't see, maybe it was there, I didn't see it, was you talked about a setback from the property line.
Did we have a call?
Was that?
I'm completely forgetting, so remind me what that one was.
I didn't talk about 4 feet. So, I mean, let's say, for example, I have my neighbor's artificial turf in his front yard, and I don't. I got to mow my lawn, and next thing I know, I'm like,
there is language that it needs to be number 7b7 appropriate barrier device, concrete mill strip, and fender board required separate architectural planners and live vegetation. So there's something there. Are you wanting an additional setback as well?
Yeah, we talked about, I think, a 4 foot setback and property line.
Is it, are we talking about just the side setbacks and the rear setback or the front setback as well?
All
property lines? I apologize that I missed that.
How does that look? Yeah,
that's my question. That's where it's going to go. Because the front is, it's always been installed up to the sidewalk or the property line. Otherwise, then you've got plenty of the situation.
Yeah.
To the side and rear.
The rear is tough though, because right now you can do it in the rear to the property line, especially if you got a fence.
So is it the side we're concerned? Because if the concern is that
I can do that,
I want to mow over your artificial turf, then it's the side we're concerned.
Yeah.
My backyard is joined my neighbor's backyard and it passes towards each other.
Yeah.
On the fence.
Well, you could say where it butts.
That was the only thing
I recall. I'm thinking on that one. Because what if they do have a big concrete barrier fence on the side and there's no chance that people are mowing it? Then
I'm trying to also imagine a 4 foot area on each side. They're going to have to landscape that, or they're going to have to.
I mean, it could be planters. It can be done tastefully. There is. You can put cactuses in there.
Gravel.
I know, I'm trying to think of the application here on this, and
the one beside my house, it's not AstroTurf, but it's, he's got mulch all the way around this kind of central island of grass, so I mean, he's got a big buffer in the post. Yeah.
There's ways to do it.
It would
require irrigation. Yeah. That's what we're trying to avoid.
So that was just one item. I don't know if the body agrees with that or not, but I would be able to say that. And then in section C, about maintenance, we need to be more specific about vehicles. Clean regularly, we say annually, semi-annually. I don't know how often they should clean, but regularly is open interpretation. That could be once a decade that one person and another person can be.
It's when it becomes an admission.
Cool.
Yeah. Or inoperable.
Cool.
Number one says it must be maintained in a light new condition for it to perform.
Well,
the example that
using your line, David.
The road pass is dirty though, right?
That, like, if you have a dog that goes to the bathroom on it, then it annual is not going to cut it.
Yeah, I
think. Excuse the pun, right?
That's going to cut it.
So I don't know what, if you should add anything there or not, but I just know, you know, and it's,
it should be replaced, the wind should be replaced, it didn't matter for amount of time. That's important.
You so gave 3 months for sword mill.
I would say within 6 months.
Okay.
And cleaning regularly, do we have any thoughts on that? I can do the regularly.
You should shower and brush your teeth regularly too.
Do that once a week.
Think about it. If you say weekly or monthly or annually, I can't even verify that. But if it's not cleaned regularly, like you can go there and say, it's obviously the consent to clean. You get complaints immediately.
Yeah, I don't think we can put a time frame on it.
Yeah, I just don't know that the time frame is even enforced.
Yeah.
If it looks bad, you can get cited for it being infected.
Well, can we add something about that unsightly if they have not cleaned up after the dog?
There is something that C2 are determined. The clean condition shall not contain holes, tears, stains, discoloration, seam separation from the surfaces, heat degradation, and must remain free from odors. While if there's pets routinely using it as their repository, then it will not be free from odors. Unless it's cleaner.
Was there previously language about the orientation of the blades, or whatever you call them, bits of plastic?
Are you referring to the one on top of it? The one that looks like a checkerboard?
I guess I know.
Yeah, the one that was installed in cotton didn't look like a checkerboard because I didn't go out there and tough grass in there and make it look natural. It just looks like this section is this way, this section is this way. It looks a little bit like a checkerboard. So.
By the way, this is really off topic, but as I was coming to this meeting, my daughter asked what her gender was. She told me that, and she wanted to be BYU soccer camp, but her soccer league's melted because she was playing soccer on artificial turf.
Different kind of turf. We've been through this.
Just saying, you know, the youth of our youth are the wise.
Yep, and it's different kind of turf that they run really.
So you can vote no when we go vote for it.
Well, yeah, I wouldn't mind this body voting no on this altogether. When the city council overturned our recommendation. So, I was a little
I voted yes. I was voting back at that time. Yeah, I still vote yes.
Is there any other suggestions to this code or this language?
Oh, as I was reviewing it, C4 I thought was unnecessary.
To replace that even?
I thought we had talked about it being replaced. Somewhere else.
In
one, it gives you necessitated easement, so I felt like C4 was redundant to strike it.
So you would add the 6 months to one?
Yeah.
And I think you would have to be replaced in its entirety.
Maybe the language is even necessitate or correct within 6 months.
So I think
we'd have to do
that, but it has to
be
replaced
sometime.
You know,
because
it must be
then
it's for
what? For what can be replaced? Well, it has an 8-year warranty, man replacement issue. It's under warranty, and then the manufacturer's supposed to be replaced.
And the uniformity language would require necessitate to be replaced by a patch. You know, like, I got a hole in my, you know, 2 square foot hole, and I've been in it. Now you're looking good. I can't imagine that one's going to be.
Just put some cutter holes in your face.
Is there a motion to be made here?
Well, if you don't really like it, maybe you should make the motion.
I'm not making the motion. I'll go look at this all night long.
This is dive in calling.
Hmm?
Is this just dive and only makes a motion?
Guess. There's not much we can do.
Well, I mean, our council's asked us to produce code.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This issue. I voted against it. I'll say that again. But I think our city council, we've appointed a government. They've asked us to write code to, you know, whether we're against the issue or not. We're not voting on the issue again tonight. We're voting on code that outlines how to address an issue, whether we like the issue or not. I think we have a responsibility, in my opinion, to write the best code we can. Which I think we've done tonight, and that's, you know, what our city council has asked us. Sorry. That's what our city council has put all this in the hands.
We haven't changed anything.
You can make a motion then if you feel so inclined.
I'm just
What verbiage have you changed?
We've talked about changing B8 to be a 4-foot setback from the property owner's side and rear setbacks.
Okay.
And then C1 changed to include language for replacing open 6 months.
Alright.
That's my message.
Alright, I'm going to make a motion then. I'm going to move that we recommend to the city council the amendments to the landscaping code 10.5.7 by adding artificial turf as an acceptable landscaping method for the front and side areas, pending the following changes as listed. Provided our staff, including the amendments we made to C1 and
B8.
And after B8. That describes the 4-foot setback from the side back property line.
Do I have a second?
Yes, sir.
Who was that second? Oh, Dodge. Okay.
Any discussion before we vote? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Nay. Okay. Next item, last item of the evening is review action on the 2018 Planning Commission meeting schedule. It's in our packet. I reviewed that. I didn't see any conflicts that I could find off the top of my head with any local community or. Maybe something here, I don't
know. June meeting's on my birthday, other than that, no.
Which one's that?
June.
We'll make sure we bring you a cake.
You won't be here, Greg.
I won't be here. I can come back. You can come back in June.
You can go ahead.
So, do I have a motion to...
The July meeting is on the 5th, Tuesday.
Okay, did someone make a motion?
I will. I move that we accept the schedule as proposed.
Do I have a second? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Thank you, Greg.
So I will entertain a motion to adjourn the meeting.
I will second.
Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Adjourned.